Les colloques du Collège de France.
Hi everyone, thank you very much Philippe and Alexandra for putting this paper in the program. So it's a paper entitled Cultivating Productivity Through Regulation, the Case of Pesticides Bans in France. And so there is this long-standing question that John mentioned and talked about how does regulation affect productivity? Because on the one hand, of course, when you regulate, probably it's because you want to correct negative externalities, so think about carbon taxation, for instance, because you want to reduce environmental damage. We talked about it with Antonin and Martin. But, of course, because you limit the span of action of firms, it could reduce their productivity because they don't have all the inputs they would like to use or all the possibilities they would like to have. But on the other hand, because you could create new markets, it could increase innovation and then boosting low-end productivity. And I think this tension is at the heart of current productivity, current European policy debate. For instance, if we think about the discussion around the ban on international combustion engines, in the sense that on the one hand, you want to reduce emissions, so you reduce productivity of automotive firms in Europe that were not doing EVs. But on the other hand, you create a market for batteries in Europe, you create a market for electrical vehicles, and so you could increase innovation on the long run and then boosting productivity on the long run. Another debate that has the same kind is the question of bans of pesticides, so glyphosate or neonicotinoids, and this is a debate I will focus on today. So the EU objective is to protect our health and the environment while maintaining agricultural productivity. So that's a big picture. But of course, if you ban a key input, a key protection input for a crop, you have short run, you have a risk of productivity decline on the short run because farmers face higher costs because they have less effective alternatives. But on the medium run, you could increase productivity because you incentivize R&D firms, agro-pharma companies, to find substitute solutions, so new molecules to increase productivity of farmers, and you also trigger farmers' adaptation into new ways of cultivating their crops. And so here is a current policy, European policy response to this debate. It's a quote from the EU Agricultural Commissioner, Christoph Hansen. We should not ban pesticides if no alternatives are available. So if you have negative impact on health or on the environment, and if one alternative at least is available, you can do whatever you want. But if no alternatives are available, you should not touch this product. And so what I will try to tackle during this presentation is this actual policy response optimal or not? So in this paper, I use French farm-level data, and I examine how regulation affects productivity and innovation through the lens of pesticide regulation. I find that regarding productivity, when no substitutes are available, indeed productivity declines, while when many substitutes are available, you see no effect. And so if you just stop at that point in the paper, you say, okay, the EU commissioner is right in the recommendation he makes. But if you take into account innovation, it's more complicated. Because when you ban without substitutes, the rent for the agro-pharma companies that will find the solution for this specific use, the rent will be so big that the incentives are very big, and so it increases innovation on the long run, and then you have a debate. Because on the one hand, because you want to maintain a high level of productivity, you want to target inputs with available substitute to minimize the cost, but on the other hand, maybe you want to ban without substitute because you trigger innovation on the long run. Okay, so I relate to different strands of the literature, of course to the literature between studying the environment and agriculture. I think my contribution is to study a large-scale environmental regulation in this specific market. Of course, the literature studying the drivers of agricultural productivity, the contribution is to study it in the context of developed economy. But more broadly, I think that this paper has an important contribution in the literature of firm-level effects of regulation that John, Philippe, Antonin, and Martin, and Michele just after me we talked about, because we have very interesting firm-level mechanisms. Sometimes we are able to identify them, but sometimes we can't because we lack inputs that firms are using. We have to rely on custom data that are only partial. The real interest of studying agricultural administrative data, in addition to having results on sovereignty of food sovereignty in Europe, is to be able to identify these mechanisms. I really want to emphasize this point. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about sugar beet. I don't know if you know a lot about the sugar beet cultivation, but let's talk about it for 1 minute. So these are sugar beets, and with sugar beet you make sugar. So this is pretty obvious. And to cultivate sugar beet, you need a key input, which are neonicotinoids. And so you put neonicotinoids around the seed where you plant it, you put it in the soil, and it protects the beet against a beet yellow virus. What happens is that you have aphids, so little bugs that goes on the leaves of beet. They sting the leaves. Then they become yellow. The photosynthesis is not working as well as it should do, and so the beet is not growing as well, not as well as an LC beet without the disease. So that's why farmers are using neonicotinoids to fight aphids. But the European Food Safety Authority shown in this meta-analysis that these molecules have harmful effect on pollinators, on bees, at a local level. But on the other hand, the French Food Safety Authority explained in the same year that there is no effective alternative available on the market as of today. And so there is a debate: do you want to ban even if you have no effective alternative available on the market? And French government decided to go on anyways and to ban this product from 2018 onwards. So the first question I want to tackle in the first part of this paper is: how does this ban affect productivity of highly exposed farm? And so my idea would be to compare firm differentially exposed to the ban based on their pre-existing reliance on sugar beet cultivation, because that's the way you want to measure the exposure of farms. Of course, well, the big endogeneity concern that arises is that farms, they may specialize in an endogenous way, because maybe they specialized a long time ago in sugar beet cultivation because they have specific assets, or maybe they moved toward other crops because they feel that this neonicotinoid regulation is in the air, and so they have a regulatory anticipation of the ban, and so maybe all these decisions of crop mix in the production function is endogenous. And so an ideal experiment from that perspective would be to randomly assign sugar beet cultivation across farms in France, and then to see to what extent there is a differential effect in between farms. Of course, I can't randomly assign sugar beet cultivation across farms in France, but the EU Commission did it for me 50 years ago, because just after the war, because of the policy in terms to have food sovereignty in Europe, The production of sugar beet increased that much that at some point in the 60s, they put a quota system, so each farm had production rights in terms of ton of beet per year that they were allowed to grow. And this was given based on how good you were at lobbying with the plant that was making sugar in the 60s, and it just was, there were no reallocation mechanism. So because your father or your grandfather got these rights in the 60s, now as a farmer, you're allowed or not to cultivate sugar beet. And this is very clear in the data. When you look at persistence of crop cultivation through time, conditional on the fact that you are not growing sugar beet in 1988, you only have 2.5% chance to cultivate sugar beet today. And so it's a closed market. While if you consider other types of crops like wheat, barley, maize, of course it's not because you are not cultivating this in the 80s that you are not cultivating it today because maybe you want to diversify, to do whatever. And so you don't have that much persistence in all the other crops, while you have strong persistence in sugar beet cultivation. So it's a closed market, which is very useful for the identification. And so then I just use this land parcel register and the balance sheet data of all the universe of farm in France. These are administrative data. And I just focus on the farms that were already producing sugar beets, because it could be that farms that were not producing at all, they are different in terms of production function than the ones that were producing. I could show you a robustness check for all universe of farms. And I observe them 4 years before the ban and 4 years after the ban. And I just take a threshold of pre-ban sugar beet land share, so how much you relied on the cultivation of the crop that is affected by the ban, and above a certain percentile, you're treated, below a certain percentile, you're in the control group. And so then I just put farm fixed effect, and it's very important, I think, in the agricultural, in identifying this effect, is I'm able to put very fine grain local year fixed effect, because of course the effect, the output in terms of when you do agricultural when you produce agricultural crops, is that of course it depends on the weather, and so you want to measure very finely the effect of weather condition. And so in France we have 30,000 cities, and so it's a very very fine grain. And so here are the results. So before the ban, the land productivity was the same in between the farms that were not relying much or relying much on sugar beet cultivation. And then you have this strong decline just after the ban, a very negative effect. In terms of magnitude, if I consider a continuous treatment, it would mean that one additional percentage point of sugar beet cultivation in your farmland, in your total farmland, would lead to a decrease of 0.4 in terms of land productivity. So euros you get per hectare. So the magnitude is pretty big. And of course, you could still, even if the quota system gives me a lot of exogeneity in terms of sugar beet cultivation, you could still say that maybe there is anticipation, in the sense that you are measuring exposure just before the ban, so between 2015 and 2017, and maybe farmers could still anticipate. And very smart farmers, they could start moving toward sugar beet to other crops in the early 2010s. And so, for a subsample of 5,000 farms, I'm able to redefine exposure based on the share of sugar beet they had in the 80s. And so, this is it could not be about anticipation the ban, because at that time, neonicotinoids were not invented yet. So, the molecule that was banned after that was not invented. And what you see is that even considering exposure, because it's a closed market, and it goes back to the persistence I mentioned at the very beginning, you have this strong decline even if you consider exposure back in the 80s. So in the interest of time today, I won't speak a lot about the mechanism, but I think it's an important contribution of this paper to use this very precise data to disentangle all the mechanism. What comes from prices, what comes from production. So if you want, we can discuss it maybe at the end of the presentation. But I just want to continue to study the real question I was mentioning, the optimal policy of European ban, European, sorry, regulation pesticides. Okay, so now I will consider a more general case. So before that, I was only talking about sugar beet, so maybe you didn't know much about sugar beet cultivation. Maybe now you know. I don't know if you liked it, but at least now you know how sugar beet are cultivated. But it's a very specific crop. And so what I want to do then is to consider more broadly all the different set of crops. And for that, I have a survey that has been done in 2017 that randomly selected land parcel across France, and it was 20,000 of them. And so farmers had to report which crops they were cultivating that year. So this is already new through register, but also all the pesticides they used for that parcel that year. So the whole set of pesticides. And so we just consider two groups, the groups of farms that used zero products that were banned the year of the survey, of the year just after the survey, and as treated farms, the farms that were using at least one product that has been banned during these 2 years. So to consider the whole set of products that could be banned. And so you still, so it's more noisy because I have less farms, you still have this negative impact on productivity, but what's nice with this new design is that I can keep the same control group, so I keep all the farms that were not affected by the ban, and then I could consider different set of treated farms. First of all, the farms for which you had no substitute available, so exactly the same case as the sugar beet, and as you see, you find the same strong decline in productivity you had with the sugar beet case, so it's in line with the result I've shown you during the case study. And if you have more than one substitute but less than the median in terms of substitute available on the market, you have this slightly negative impact. So maybe you would like to ban this product and just compensate farmer to mitigate this little loss in terms of land productivity. But when you have many substitutes available, so a number of substitutes above the median, then you have no effect. And so if you have negative health and environmental effect, you can totally ban these products. So once you're there in the analysis, you say, okay, the EU commissioner is right. In that case, you can ban. Here you can ban and compensate. And there you should not touch because the loss is too big for farmers, and so you should not regulate. But once you take into account innovation in the equation, it's more complicated. Because when you have fewer substitutes, actually, so when you have, in an extreme case, no substitute for a given use, if you want to fight aphids on a sugar beet, for instance, then you create super high innovation rents for firms that would like to find an innovation that could tackle this agricultural problem. And so, of course, it's very in line with the literature of Philippe and Peter Witt about when you have higher rents, you have higher incentives in terms of innovation. So, to study this question, I consider another set of data, which is a French registry of crop protection products. And so, here my unit of observation is not a farm anymore, it's what I will call an agricultural use. So let's say that you want to find a target, so aphids, on a crop sugar beet. And so I have the whole set, all the combination of all targets on all crops, and the number of products available each year in between 1960 and 2023. And so it's a balanced panel of agricultural uses during all these years. And so for each use, I will define what I will call an annual regulatory event as the ratio between the number of products available at the start of the year, so the number of products for this use, and it will be the denominator, and the numerator will be the number of banned products during a year. And so for each use, I consider the biggest regulatory event during this whole period, and you have two cases. Either this ratio is equal to 1, because all the products available at the start of the year are banned during the year, or it's between 0 and 1, because you have at least one product still available at the end of the year. And so what I will do is that I will consider these uses as treated and all these uses as controlled, and perform, once again, a simple event study design with use fixed effect, year fixed effect, and just a probability that at least one invention occurs, so you have a new product that is allowed at the European, at the French level for this use, let's think about fighting aphids on a sugar beet. And here is the result. So you see that before you have no differential effect in terms of innovation occurring before the ban, and after the ban, especially after 5 years, you have an increase in number of products available for the uses for which you had no substitute. And so indeed, regulation increases innovation on the long run because the rents are bigger. And what's nice with this data is that I can.
Here, innovation is measured as how you measure innovation.
So a new product is available for use, wherever it's coming from. And so what's nice with this data is I can disentangle at least two margins. What I will call adaptation-based innovation, in the sense that because I have the whole set of molecules allowed for any crop, any pest, I can disentangle the first margin, which is, okay, this molecule was used for another pest in the same crop, or another crop on the same pest. And so it's somehow adaptation, so you adapt an already existing molecules to your needs. And this is part of the answer, so indeed you have an increase in innovation, but you could say, so maybe this could be adaptation-based innovation, could also be lobbying. That you say, this molecule is available for wheat, we are sugar beet producer, the regulation hit us very badly, and so we want to take this molecule. So this could be not only innovation. But what's interesting in this data set is that I'm available to look, because I have all the molecules available on all other uses, the molecules that are totally new for the market. So no agricultural uses that were able to use these molecules in the past. And so this is also increasing, meaning that after 5 years, you really have new molecules that arrive on the market and probably increases productivity of farmers on the long run, and also decrease harmful effect on the environment, because that's why you banned all the pre-existing molecules. So just to wrap up everything I've said today, so using French farm level data, but quite close to firm level data, actually in the sense of design, I examine how pesticides regulation affects productivity and innovation. My main findings are that regulation without substitutes reduces productivity of impacted farms, and on the other hand, it triggers more innovation. And so the policy implications that I see from these results are that, of course, when you regulate with a substitute, you should support farmers with compensation and or mitigation strategies to minimize the cost. And of course, send clear regulatory signals to incentivize industry R&D on the long run. Like this is part of the debate we had around electrical vehicles. You want to send a clear signals about the regulation that will happen in, let's say, 10 or 15 years from now, because the industry will be able by then to find, hopefully, to find substitutes. So thank you very much for your attention, and I'm very happy to take your question.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.